It's all part of the learning process. Every runner has gone out too slow in a race, has gone out too fast in a race. It's okay. It's part of the learning process. You learn more about what your body is capable of. And at the end of the day, it all makes you a better runner.
This is Running for Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running for Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, who only likes watermelon-flavored watermelon, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 67 of Running for Real. I am really happy that you are here with me today. Thank you so much for joining me and for checking out this episode. This is going to be a good one for you. Okay, so last week you heard about the fascinating and admirable journey that Luke Tyberski took, covering 1,200 miles, that's 2,000 kilometers, over 1,200 miles, I should say, in 12 days for his ultimate triathlon. His story was so motivational and another example of someone who is accomplishing incredible things that they never thought they would. Now, I did end up watching the documentary about Luke's journey on Amazon Prime, and wow, it was quite the story and even better than this interview showed. So I definitely recommend going to watch that Ultimate Triathlon documentary if you have Amazon, or maybe you can find it somewhere else, I'm not actually sure. And make sure you go back to that episode last week if you did miss it. It was a good one. So I thought for today it would be good to address all those textbook runner mistakes we have all unfortunately made. You know, the ones that you made when you first started running, and then probably a few times since, even though you know you should know better. My friend Jason Fitzgerald seemed like the perfect person to do this episode, and I hope you will pass this on to your new to the running world friends, as well as reminding yourself. And I think it will really help new runners on their journey so they can end up wise like us. Not really. We all know that we're not as wise as we would love to be, but they will hopefully get to this wise stage a lot sooner than it took us to get there. And if you are enjoying the Running for Real podcast and the Tina for Real podcast, if you don't know what that is my new daily podcast, which I kind of go over funny stories that happen, training advice. I answer your questions about anything. Yes, you can submit a question about my top 10 ice cream flavors and I will answer it, whatever you want to know. These episodes are short, 5 to 15 minutes, and you can find it by searching your favorite podcast player for Tina Muir or Tina for Real, whatever you want to type in. Now, I'm excited to announce I have another new sponsor for you to meet today, Aptiv, and I'm going to talk about them along with a Hoka ad, which you may have missed last week, but I am excited for both of these sponsors. I want to thank them for joining me in this Running for Real journey, so let's go meet them. This episode of the Running for Real podcast is brought to you by Aptiv. Aptiv provides audio-based workouts created by certified personal trainers available through a mobile app. New members get 30% off an annual membership by visiting aptiv.com/running for real. That's aptiv.com/running for real. That's the number for running for real. This podcast is sponsored by Hoka One One. Hoka One One is a running shoe unlike any other. You've probably seen them around the running scene. I know I had. And I wondered, would I actually like them? Well, I did. And I have a feeling you will too. Run in their newest release, the Clifton 5, it has marshmallow soft cushion and marshmallow light weight to keep you comfortable throughout the day. Jason, thank you so much for joining me on the Running for Real podcast, my friend. I am really excited to talk to you today and answer all these typical questions that we hear over and over again. Many runners listening today will have wondered about these. So thank you so much for being here. I'm looking forward to this a lot.
Well, thank you, Tina. The feeling is mutual. I'm excited to be here too.
Yeah, no, this is going to be great. And firstly, when I was looking on your website the other day, there was just a little badge on there that said 2017 Influencer of the Year by, was it Men's Health Magazine, Men's Fitness?
It was the Men's Running Magazine in the UK.
Yeah, amazing. Congrats. That's really exciting. And yeah, really, I didn't know that, but that was really cool to see. And you know, one thing I love about your website is that you focus on kind of quality rather than just these quick fixes or things that are very, this hurts, this is what you do. You know, you kind of show the big picture, which I love, and it's really important. So, tell the listeners who may not have heard of you a bit about what strength running is and what you do on a daily basis.
Sure. So I started strength running in 2010 after I almost quit running. I was injured for about 6 months with a really horrible IT band injury after my first marathon. I ran the New York City Marathon in 2008 and then spent a big chunk of 2009 sitting on the couch and watching way too many reruns of House because I didn't know what to do with myself when I wasn't running. And when I got healthy, after seeing many physical therapists, after doing all this research on the injury itself, but also on more holistic, comprehensive training, I realized that if I wanted to keep running and keep improving without all these injuries, because I've had, besides that IT band injury, plantar fasciitis, Achilles tendinopathy, different muscle strains, SI joint problems. I mean, I could go on, but you know, I knew that if I wanted to keep doing what I loved, I really needed to change how I approached my training. And that was the genesis of strength running and started in 2010. And, you know, at this point we have an award-winning blog, we have a podcast now and a lot of videos that we put together. And so it's really grown and taken off and kind of has a life of its own now. But, you know, on a daily basis, I'm in touch with a lot of runners, helping them get over their issues that they might have and helping them achieve their goals. Some of my runners have goals like, run a 5K, and some runners are preparing for 100-mile races or FBI fitness tests. You know, we kind of do a lot with the different runners that I work with. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all goal achievement. And with running, one of the things that I love about the sport is that it scales up to the best runners in the world and it scales down to beginners. Yeah. And so I really like that about the sport, and it allows me to work with a lot of different types of athletes. So I'm looking forward to all the questions that we have for today.
No, this is going to be fun. And I am going to be very surprised if you haven't had any of these questions today. You're going to have seen them all before. I've seen them all before. Most people have seen them all before, particularly known as beginner mistakes. But you've mentioned there running kind of goes from the top to the bottom. And a lot of these mistakes we make over and over again, like, you know, myself included, recently have been injured. Definitely my fault, definitely mistakes that I had made, should have known better. So even if someone listening is experienced, does think, I know the answer to this, maybe this will give you a bit of a reminder and maybe just a reality check that, actually, I probably should kind of, you know, think about this a little bit more before I go on. So Jason, I'm going to kind of give you a scenario for each one, what you would say to this person, or what you would say if someone is dealing with this, to kind of reassure them, make them feel that they're, you know, not just stupid and making the same mistakes, because that's what we kind of tend to do as runners, is beat ourselves up. And then what they can do next time to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So let's start with, these are going to be kind of random because I think it's kind of, you know, fun to kind of just change it up a bit. So I'm going to start with one which I am always hounding pretty hard in my community, which is running. I tell people to run without looking at their watch. But, and I know you enjoy running by feel as well. But for many runners, going out too fast in a race is terrifying, and it can be difficult to figure out if you're going out too fast before it's too late. So for someone who says, I don't know what race pace feels like, I don't really know what I'm supposed to be doing early on, what would you say to them about that situation?
All right. So first, let's say I don't know any of these questions beforehand. So this is like I'm applying for a job interview. This is great. So you're right. I love when runners run by feel for more of their training. I think it's a wonderful way to get in better tune with the signals that your body is communicating to you and learning to know what those signals mean. And that takes a lot of trial and error and years of experience. So with that said, you know, there are some training sessions that lend themselves to running by feel a lot better than some other training sessions. So let's just say this runner is training for a 5K and they're afraid of going out too fast and not really sure what race pace feels like. They've been running by feel for some of their runs. In this scenario, I would say, you know, it's really great to do runs that where the pace isn't super important by feel. So your recovery runs, if you just have, you know, kind of a base run or a distance run on the schedule, that's a good run just to go out there and run by effort. So maybe the effort is easy or, you know, easy, moderate, somewhere along those lines. Those are the great runs just to go out and kind of see how you're feeling. But when you're doing race specific workouts, so if you're running 3 times a mile at your 5K pace on the track, you know, these are the workouts where you actually want to know what pace you're running, because that has a direct impact on your race performance. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to run, let's just say 8 minutes per mile for the 5K, you want to be running those mile repetitions at 8 minutes per mile. And I love doing formal workouts on a track because you don't just get the time for the interval, you get the time for the splits within the interval. Mm-hmm. So
what do you mean by splits for someone who is a brand new beginner? What do you mean by splits when you just say about like on the track? What do you mean by that for someone who wasn't sure?
So your splits are basically segments of the interval. So let's say you're running a mile, you can look at your watch every 400 meters. And if you're trying to run an 8 minute mile, every 400 should be 2 minutes if you're running perfect pacing. Mm-hmm. So you can check in multiple times within that interval to check your pace. And you could go even more granular than that. You could look at every 200, you know, you should be at a minute every 200. So by doing workouts like this, you're not only really reinforcing that race pace, both physically and mentally, but you're getting that valuable feedback within the interval. And knowing what pace you're running when you're on the track, you know, you also should be paying attention to how your body is feeling. And when you run a lot of track workouts over a long period of time, you're going to really understand what these different paces feel like. And they're going to feel more intuitive. They're going to be a lot easier to hit. So, you know, you might get on the track and say, I'm going to run a mile in 8 minutes. And you don't have to look at your watch every 200 meters or every 400 meters, because after a while, you're going to get really good at pacing yourself. Mm-hmm. And while you're not going to get those, you know, short splits within a race, typically you only get mile markers, you can use that information to better inform your race pacing. So you can kind of dial into that effort and really hopefully hit the right time through the mile in this 5K example that we're using. Mm-hmm. So I think a good combination of running by feel and then doing more formal structured workouts on the track where you can really work on exactly running a certain pace is a valuable strategy. And, you know, we should say like, it does take trial and error and a lot of experience, and that those trial and errors are going to be running poor workouts or going out way too fast in a race, but it's all part of the learning process. And, you know, I think every runner has gone out too slow in a race, has gone out too fast in a race, and it's okay. It's part of the learning process. You learn more about what those paces feel like, what your body is capable of, and at the end of the day, it all makes you a better runner.
Yeah, no, great advice. Thank you so much, Jason. And just one thing I want to add for anyone listening, when he says about running how it feels, I mean, literally think about how quickly your arms are moving, how fast you feel like you're moving across the ground. Like take a moment to kind of body check, self check how this actually feels and bank it into your mind so that when you're in that race, you can say to yourself, oh, it feels like my arms are moving a lot faster than they usually do. Well, that's probably a sign that you are going too fast. So, you know, when Jason says about really, you know, thinking about how you feel, take some physical kind of checkpoints that you can actually use in a race to check yourself as well. Okay. Yeah. So on that note, you know, you said about taking easy runs and having them be run by feel. So someone who is saying, okay, I'm trying this, but now all my easy runs are way slower than they used to be. And I don't want to get slower. What would you say there?
Well, I think there's two types of easy runs. There's easy runs and there's recovery runs. I think it's okay if those recovery runs are really slow. And so a recovery run is What I would say is the shortest run that you might have scheduled for the week, that's probably a good candidate for the recovery run. And for those runs, you know, if your typical easy pace is, say, 9 to 10 minutes a mile, I don't really care if you're running 10:30 or maybe even 11 minutes per mile, as long as you then report after the run that it felt really easy, that it felt comfortable, controlled, conversational. Those are my three C's of recovery running. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you are too slow during a long run, for example, you know, I'm pretty adamant that most long runs should be at your easy pace, but they're not recovery runs. They shouldn't be the slowest run that you do of the entire week. Then, you know, maybe at that point, you kind of check in with yourself a couple of times throughout the run to see how fast you might be running. Now, I'm going to date myself here, but when I started running, there were no GPS watches. So what I would do all the time is I would just run on the track for one lap or maybe two laps within a distance run. And I just wanted to see how fast I was going. I didn't change my pace. I was running the same effort that I was running for the entire run, except I did, you know, a 400 or maybe a full mile on the track. And I wouldn't even look at my watch for any of the splits within whatever distance I was running. I would just time myself for a mile, look down at my watch, and, you know, I was just looking to see what kind of an effort I was running. And when you do that all the time for a couple of years, you know, you get a really good sense of, you know, what pace you're running on a typical day and how that might be impacted with, you know, the workout that you did the previous day, or if you've taken 2 days off previously, you know, those things are going to make you run either a little slower or a little faster. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of valuable ways to guesstimate how fast or slow your distance runs are if you're not using a GPS watch. But for the most part, I wouldn't be too concerned if you think you're a little too slow on those distance runs. Maybe you speed up a little bit at the end. You put a little bit of a faster finish on it if you're feeling good. Something like that, I think, is a good approach. But, you know, it's not an issue that I'm super concerned with. Mm-hmm. Tina, what do you think about this one?
I mean, I think a lot of it is, if you are running slower on these recovery runs, like Jason talked about, the ones where you actually need to take that time, you know, they are designated days for recovery. If you're running slower than you usually would, then maybe you should consider that you're running a bit too fast. Usually without running, you know, when you're running by paces, you're letting the pace control you rather than how you feel. And I would kind of see it as if you're running slower on those days, that means you can run faster on the days that matter, which is the way you want it, rather than kind of ending up where most runs end up being, you know, within 30 seconds of each other, whether they're hard or easy. And then you just kind of get stuck and never really have that difference between fast and easy. So I would say it's probably a good thing if you're getting slower, because it's showing that you are actually running what your body feels ready for. But like you said, that shouldn't be every day. That shouldn't be 5 out of 6 days a week. That should be the days you are designating to recovery, and, you know, maybe the days that you had a hard workout the day before or something like that.
Another thing I'll add too is I've found that a lot of runners tend to get slower on their recovery and some of their distance runs when they're in peak training. Mm-hmm. And that's because the volume is really high. So they're running relatively higher mileage than what they're used to. And the workouts are either right at or approaching kind of the peak intensity of the mm-hmm. workouts that they might be doing. So, you know, when the workload is substantial, you know, you have to slow down a little bit on those easier days so that you can, you know, stay healthy, so that you can properly absorb that training stimulus and get stronger, faster, gain more endurance. All the things that we really want from these workouts and long runs that we're doing. So I wouldn't be too concerned if you're, say, you know, in heavy marathon training and you're finding that a lot of your runs are slower than what they used to be. Mm-hmm. I think as long as you're hitting appropriate workout paces, you're feeling good enough to go running when you're supposed to be going running, and you're completing the long runs and everything that you have to be doing, in that moment, I would say, you know, I'm okay with you slowing down on these easy runs because you're working really hard all week long.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Something has to give, you know, you have to slow down.
Exactly. Great advice then. Thank you for mentioning that, because I think that is really important and something that, you know, I was trying to get at with the original question was that kind of thing that, you know, why am I slowing down when I'm supposed to be getting faster? But that is a very good reason why that might be happening. So hopefully that helps you if that's something you are struggling with.
Yeah, you want to get faster in a race, not on an easy run.
Exactly. Yeah, get faster when it matters. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about something that I know you know a lot about. Someone who is just trying to get back to running or maybe start running in the first place keeps ending up injured and they think, I'm not running that much. Why does this keep happening to me? You know, maybe they're a first time runner and they get to, I don't know, 10, 15 miles and they're saying, well, everyone else is doing 30, 40. Why am I getting injured at 10, 15? So what would you say to someone in that situation? Being that I know this is a Pandora's box, what would be your response?
Yeah, we can open this box and pull out almost anything. So there's a bunch of different things I would look at in this specific scenario. I would go down a checklist. I would say, number one, are you running too fast? So when you go out there and you're running your 10 to 15 miles a week, compared to some races that you might have run, are you running appropriate pacing? So, you know, we've been talking a lot about easy pace, recovery pace. If you have a history of injuries and you're just getting back into training, now's not the time to worry about performance. Now's not the time to worry about what pace that you're running. Let's just worry about consistency and building a foundation of general fitness first. Mm-hmm. And that often means that you have to run kind of slow, and there's nothing wrong with that. So first things first, I would look at pacing, because I've found a lot of runners are simply just running too fast pretty much every day. The other thing that I would look at is, are you a strong runner? So are you doing any kind of strength training? If not, that would be a big red flag in my book, particularly for someone who has a history of injuries. If you're a runner with a history of injuries, then, and you're not doing any strength training, that would be almost the number one thing I would add to your program is, let's get you started doing some real runner specific strength training. It doesn't have to be, you know, heavy lifting in the gym. You do not have to turn into a Gold's Gym lifetime member. You can do some bodyweight exercises at home after every run for 10 to 20 minutes. And, you know, if you're new at this, that's all you need. I think you can, you know, revamp your strength training in the future once you kind of want to get more serious with it. But until then, let's just start with some body weight work, and that'd be a good start. The other thing that I would look at for a runner like this is the structure of their runs per week. So I would just want to know, like, how many days are you running? What does your mileage progression look like? So if you go from 6 months off of no running, and you go 10 miles the first week, 15 miles the second week, and you really have only hit 20, 25 miles ever as a peak mileage, then, you know, we need to scale back your progression of mileage mm-hmm. so that you're just adding miles a lot more gradually to your training plan. So, you know, we could probably talk about, you know, 25 different things that contribute to injuries in this specific scenario. But, you know, for me, The big three in my book are always, are you increasing your mileage too quickly? Are you running too fast? And also, are you not doing any strength training? Because right. I found that those pretty much are catch-all items that if you fix those issues, 90% of runners are going to have far fewer injuries. And they fix a lot of the training mistakes that we make with our running. So those are the things that I would focus on.
Great. Thank you so much. And just before we kind of go on to, I want to talk about, you mentioned strength training there. For someone who is in this situation, they're saying, yeah, but I don't want to lose my passion. You know, I'm really into it right now and I don't want to fall off the wagon and only run a few miles a week because then I'm scared I'm going to lose my motivation for it. Anything you would add with that kind of extra
well,
bit in
I
there?
I would encourage this runner to think long-term. I would encourage this runner to say, look, we might pull you back and have you only run twice a week for a couple miles at a time right now. But, you know, running is a sport that is best thought of in terms of months and years rather than days and weeks. Mm-hmm. And if we can just stay patient and consistent for a few months, you know, that runner is going to progress and improve pretty dramatically after just a month or two of just building that base, of gaining some strength. Because it does take that long for those physical adaptations to occur. You know, mm-hmm. typically it's a couple weeks for almost any kind of training stimulus. So, you know, if you want to build fitness, you're going to need multiple couple week increments to really get there. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, stay consistent. And, you know, if your coach is having you do a lot of other stuff besides running, you know, things like strength training or flexibility work, cross training, you know, I think it's helpful to understand that, you know, as runners, I think it's better to describe ourselves as athletes that specialize in running rather than just runners, because that means we're not just running. It means we're doing so many other things in our training. We're doing that strength work. We're doing drills. We're doing flexibility work. We're doing a lot of other things to improve our general athleticism and other elements of our fitness aside from endurance.
Yeah.
So if we can reframe how we think of ourselves that way, then I think it gives us a more holistic picture of the physical skills we really need to be a successful runner. And hopefully that'll make us more patient and give us, you know, the patience to stick with those, you know, early couple months where we're not running as much as we want to, but we know we have to put in that work to be able to run as much as we want to in the future.
Yeah, that's great. Putting in the foundations to be able to have a long running career rather than just kind of focusing on the quick fix. Because most of us know by now through running that it's never going to be kind of a, you get out there and you're never going to be able to get away for very long with just waking up in the morning, running out the door, coming back, getting straight into your day. There's so much more that goes into it than that, particularly if you have some goals that you want to go get. Just one more thing I would add. If you are someone who is in this situation and you're really kind of fed up, you know, I'm only running, you know, 6 miles a week. This is not fun or whatever. You could reserve that time you hope to be using for running in the future, or you will be because you're being smart. And take a walk. You know, I know walking is, trust me, I understand that walking is not anywhere near as fun as running. It's not, you know, going to give you the same endorphin rush, but you have reserved that time that you will be filling it with running in the future. And at least you're getting out there and doing something. So just kind of wanted to add that in there. Right. So on that note, strength training. You mentioned, you know, someone early on can kind of get away with doing body weight stuff at home, maybe a typical circuit you might see online. Now, you offer a strength training program, and my listeners know that we do as well at Running For Real, my strength coach and I, Drew. But tell us a bit about, you know, for someone who says, well, I'm doing strength training, I'm doing, you know, the 10 best exercises I should be doing, I'm doing sit-ups every day. Why do I need to do anything else? Isn't that enough? What would you say?
Well, yeah, now we're transitioning from strength training as mostly injury prevention to strength training as a performance improver. Mm-hmm. And that kind of strength training necessarily has to look very different than a lot of the routines and circuits that we might be doing at home with body weight exercises. Because the goal of strength training when you're in the gym, when you're lifting heavy, when you're actually doing weightlifting, is basically improving the body's ability to produce force. And that's kind of an exercise science-y way of saying, like, you have to hit the ground with more force so that you can run faster. Mm-hmm. And that's what strength training in the gym is really for. Number one, force application increasing. So you're going to be able to run faster. Number two, injury prevention. And the other thing that lifting in the gym does for you is that it makes you more economical. So it improves your efficiency because you are not only getting stronger, but you're developing more coordination. There's a strength coach up in Boulder that, you know, I worked with to put together this programming. Mm-hmm. And he likes to say that strength training is coordination training under resistance. And I think that's a really interesting way of describing strength training for runners, because that's what we want. We want to be highly coordinated, strong athletes that are capable of running really fast. And he also says there are no weak, fast runners. Mm-hmm. So if you see those runners at the front of the pack, they're winning races, they're, you know, running really fast, they're strong athletes. And if you get those folks in the gym, they're going to be able to lift a relatively high amount of weight based on their body size. And so for me, strength training is so important that I don't really even consider it cross training. I just consider it part of the training that you have to do as a runner if you want to maximize your performances. Mm-hmm. So for a lot of the runners that I work with, that's their goal. They want to run a PR. They want to get to a new distance. They have these performance goals. And when we can put really well-programmed strength training into their running plan, the results, I think, speak for themselves. You know, they're really powerful. And the thing about strength training when you're in the gym is that, you know, much like a running plan, it is periodized. Yes. It is progressive. So, you know, when we talk about periodization, you know, a lot of runners understand that, you know, you have your base phase of training very early in a training plan where you're just building your mileage and general fitness. And then you're running a lot faster, faster workouts, more challenging sessions later in the training plan. Mm-hmm. And that's basic periodization right there. We do the same thing with strength training. You know, the first phase of training is basically an injury prevention focus. It's on general strength and building, you know, a stronger runner with not only stronger muscles, but connective tissues, so that when we do get to the more challenging strength workouts, we're ready for them. And those challenging workouts include power exercises. They include much heavier weightlifting. And those are the exercises and types of lifting that are going to give you the adaptations that you really want. So there's a lot of different ways that we could structure that strength training, but you know, that is the general progression of how things go and how it differs from body weight training. Because I think there's different goals for each type of strength training. But you know, if you wanted to do basically ideal training, I think both have a good place in any running program.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I think you kind of maybe think about something there, which is you mentioned about the periodization, and that is really important. But if you guys think about running itself, like Jason said, if you did the same workout every Tuesday, Thursday for you know, a year or even just 3 months. Yes, sure enough, you would get faster at that workout over time. But also, not only would it be very boring for you, but you're also missing out on a lot because you're missing out different distances, different intervals, things like that. And if you think about strength training, if you've got these different workouts that are changing depending on where you are in your season, but you also can change the number of reps, you can change the tempo, like how fast or slow you lower down over that exercise. There's so many different things that come into it that, like Jason said, if you do care about performance, it's not just about doing certain exercises over and over again, because you're A, missing out on areas that you could be strengthening, but B, you're also missing out on other things that, you know, having someone who knows what they're doing is really going to help you kind of tune into. And it may be something, you know, down the road you can learn from them and then take it on yourself. But I think most people need some guidance to start with strength training, as it is so, make such a big difference, but it's also so overwhelming, essentially, if you are kind of starting from the beginning. So just wanted to
mention. It's like learning a whole new sport.
Exactly. So yeah. Okay.
That great. Is intimidating, and it takes a lot of work, both physically and mentally, to learn a new sport. And so, it can be difficult, but you know, when you said a runner would never run the same workout twice a week for 3+ months, you know, like I almost laughed, because of course we would never do that. I don't think any runner has ever seen a training plan that includes the same workout every week for the entire plan. But for some reason, we do the same thing with our strength training. So it's an interesting way to apply the same lessons that we would in running to our weightlifting. Mm-hmm. And the more and more I learn about weightlifting, the more and more I learn that the two sports are incredibly similar, while at the same time being very, very different. A lot of the same principles apply.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Thank you so much. All right. Okay. Let's do something a bit different. Cramps at mile 20 of a marathon. I hear this over and over and over again. You know, I've looked at my nutrition. I've taken electrolytes. I know it's not what I'm eating, but I keep cramping at mile 20. What does that mean?
So if we're talking about muscle cramps rather than, say, a side stitch, then as far as I understand it, the latest, the research that's coming out is actually showing that muscle cramps are not caused so much by electrolyte imbalances or losing a lot of salt through your sweat, but really because you're trying to do something that your body isn't quite ready to do. And so it's really common in the marathon, because the marathon is a really hard event. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't appreciate how difficult racing 26.2 miles is. But you know, if you're cramping at mile 20, I would look to two culprits. Number one is, Are you prepared for the distance? So a lot of runners will run 16, 17 miles for their max long run and then wonder why they're cramping at mile 20 in a marathon. I'm one of those coaches that's a firm believer in marathon specific long runs. If you're going to race 26.2 miles and you don't get your long run up to about 20 miles, you're doing yourself a disservice. And I don't think you're going to be ready for the distance.
Even if someone is planning on running like a 5 hour marathon, that 20 miles may take them, 4 hours.
In that case, there are some caveats to this rule, as pretty much any rule in running can be bent or broken. I generally don't like runners to run more than about 3.5 hours for their long runs. So, time on feet is an important metric to track when you're doing long runs, I think. So if your long runs are maxing out at 3.5 hours, I wouldn't go too much more than that because I'm not sure if you're getting any more physiological benefit from running that long. And it is dramatically increasing your injury risk. Running, being on your feet for that long is much more stressful for your body. And, I would just have the runner cut the run at 3.5 hours.
Okay, so 20 miles or 3.5 hours, whichever comes first.
Yeah, I would. That's a good guideline to use, definitely.
Okay, so sorry, I interrupted you there. So that was one of the things you would say?
Yes. So number one is making sure that you're prepared for the distance itself. And then the other culprit is making sure that you're prepared for the pace that you're attempting to run. So if you're someone who's trying to run 8 minute pace for a marathon and your first 10 miles were at 7:30 pace, and then you start wondering why you're cramping after the halfway point, the issue is your pacing. So your body has to first be ready for the distance of a marathon. And then second, ready for the pace that you're attempting to run it at. So proper pacing is really critical in the marathon because of this reason, because if you start out too fast, not only are you incurring a lot more muscle damage, but you're burning through fuel a lot faster. And, that's going to contribute to you just hitting the wall later in the race. There's a lot of different reasons why proper pacing is important, but the cramping issue is an important one too. And, if you're just too fast in the early stages of that marathon, you're going to have to slow down later in the race and you're probably going to get some cramps because, your body's just simply not ready for the pace that you're about to run.
Great. Thank you so much for clearing that up because that is pretty much the same answer I give over and over again. But it's so important because I think people often jump to, oh, it's my electrolytes, it's my salt. And it often, as you mentioned, is not the case. So thank you for clearing that one up. Okay. How about someone who says, I keep getting injured or I am really struggling. I feel maybe overtrained or I just feel really tired, but I just don't want to take a day off. I just love my running too much. I don't want a day off. What would you say?
That's a tough one. Look, we're runners. We love running. That's what we want to do. But if you are injured, I don't think running through pain is ever a smart idea because if you love running, you shouldn't ever want to limit your future running. And that's what running through pain might be doing. Mm. There's a great quote by Tom Foreman. He's a CNN anchor, but he's also a runner. Mm-hmm. Have you spoke to him?
Yep. I know Tom well.
Yeah, he's great. He wrote a book, My Year of Running Dangerously, I think the title was. Yep. And he had a great quote saying, the most important run is tomorrow's run. And the point of that is saying, don't do anything today that is going to negatively impact your ability to run tomorrow. And I think about that a lot because I think it is a very forward thinking mindset to have. And it forces us to recognize that if we make poor training decisions today, then we might not be able to run at all tomorrow. And I think any runner who wants to be strategic with their training, any runner who wants to increase their longevity in the sport should think long-term. And long-term thinking means that you're not going to do anything today that's going to have any detrimental effect on your run tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So if you're injured, focus on treating your injury, focus on getting healthy so that you can run healthy and pain-free in the future. If you're overtrained, your running is not going to be very fun. It's going to be a struggle. It's going to be laborious. Your heart rate is probably going to be through the roof and you're not going to be enjoying yourself when you're out there running. So, as a coach, I have to kind of be the voice of reason to a lot of runners. And typically that means having them run less and slow down. Surprisingly, it's usually not the, you know, the hard coach on the side of the track yelling at their athletes. So a lot of the times I am actually telling runners to take more time off, and you'd be surprised. The runners that take more time off, the runners that are a little bit more cautious with running on an injury or through any bout of, you know, severe fatigue, are the runners that end up running more over the long term and run faster over the long term. So I'd rather take a day off and stay healthy rather than run an extra day, but then have to take 2 weeks off because of a serious injury.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you so much. That's really helpful. And, you know, I love especially what you were saying, that quote from Tom. Thank you, Tom. I know you are listening right now for saying that. That is a great piece of advice. And I'd actually forgotten he said that. So good to keep in mind.
Hey, Tom.
And finally, okay. I had one more that I wanted to ask. So, you know, life happened. I had to miss a workout. Maybe, you know, let's say it's Friday. I was supposed to do my workout on Thursday. Or let's say it's Saturday. I was supposed to do my workout on Thursday. Life happened, got in the way. Can I do my workout today? Because I don't want to miss it, but I have a long run tomorrow. What would you say?
Ooh, in this case, I would say, let's just skip the workout. You know, life is going to go on. If you miss the workout, particularly because of some stressful event in your life, like work was really busy, you had a family emergency, you have a lot on your plate. And stress is stress. Let's not pile on even more stress by doing a workout the day before your long run, because that's not only a lot of physical stress, it's a lot of mental stress too. So I rarely like it when runners make up workouts, particularly when they're really close to the next priority session. So, you know, typically if it's a faster workout and a long run, you know, I want at least one day in between. If the runner is more of a beginner or intermediate level, you know, preferably 2 days in between, assuming that their recovery is just a little bit slower. And I think that is a great injury prevention measure, but it also ensures that you're not trying to do a workout or a long run when you're just so fatigued that you're not going to get as much out of the workout. You know, you want to be able to perform well so that you get that really solid training stimulus that's going to help you get better. And so if you're not, you're just not going to get the same stimulus and you're not going to get as much benefit from the workout. So in this particular situation, I would say, let's just skip the workout. Let's just run an easy run on Saturday with some strides maybe afterward. And then on Sunday, you can do your long run. And presumably, if your workout schedule is Thursday workout and Sunday long run, you might be doing another workout earlier in the week, perhaps on Tuesday. And if 1 week in your training plan, you go from two workouts a week to one workout a week, your body is barely going to notice the difference. So let's just forget it. We can move on. And, you know, your body is going to not know the difference. You'll be fine.
And I especially, that's exactly what I would say as well. And I especially want to say to someone listening who might be thinking, okay, well, I'm going to leave one day in between, but maybe you couldn't run Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And so you're going to do workout, easy run, long run, easy run, workout, and cram them in. That doesn't work either. Like, you don't want to get to a point where you're trying to cram things in, you know, giving yourself one day in between, which is what Jason just said is okay, but you're getting three within 6 days, which is too much. So be thoughtful. And like Jason said, one workout doesn't change anything. So keep that in mind.
One way that I like to think about that is the rhyming phrase intensity density. So if the intensity of your schedule is, you know, two workouts and a long run per week, because those are kind of your hard days, and you have to miss a day and rearrange your schedule, if you have to make it so that the density of your intensity is really dense, then you're probably setting yourself up for an injury.
Okay.
So try not to, have those really high quality days too close together. Try to spread them out through the week as much as you can. And when the density is lower, the injury risk is lower too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great advice. Thank you. That's really helpful. And I think that's something easy to remember as well. Okay, Jason, we're just going to take a moment to thank our sponsors and we'll be right back with the Running for Real 4. This episode of the Running for Real podcast is brought to you by Aptiv. Aptiv provides audio-based workouts created by certified personal trainers available through a mobile app. What does that mean you get? Well, access to expert trainers, a flexible audio workout format so you can work out the way you like. And I've told you over and over again how important it is to listen to your body. The Aptive trainers have a wide array of personalities so you can find the personal training style that motivates you. You know I love the gentle, be kind to yourself approach, but maybe that doesn't work for you. What is even cooler is that Aptive's in-house music production team creates music playlists that are perfectly timed to the intensity and pace of your training. When you need a boost, the music keeps you going. When you need to back off, the music dials back with you. Aptiv also has a 5K, 10K, half and full marathon training program. And for future mamas out there, there's a full maternity program broken down by trimester so you can work out and build strength for a healthy pregnancy. Pretty cool, huh? Subscriptions start at $14.99 billed monthly or $99.99 for an annual membership. But for a limited time, new members get 30% off an annual membership by visiting aptiv.com/runningforreal. That's aptiv.com/runningforreal with the number 4. This podcast is sponsored by Hoka One One. You probably know, at the beginning of this year, I had a whole new world open up to me to try out other shoes. There was only one brand, though, I really wanted to try. Mostly because I was curious. Were they actually comfortable? Did they feel weird? Was there any chance I'd actually like them? Especially when I'd always been someone who'd gone for minimalist shoes. So I got myself a pair of Hoka One One Clifton 4 shoes, and I decided to do the one thing I tell runners almost on a daily basis never to do. Go out for a longer run in a new pair of shoes. The first time, I should add, I had worn a different brand of shoes in 4 years. But you know what? I ran for over an hour and they felt amazing. They were surprisingly comfortable, smooth and light. I love them, and now I'm really excited about the newly updated version, the Clifton 5. They have marshmallow soft cushion and marshmallow light weight to keep you comfortable throughout the day. They're even better than the 4, and I'm telling you, if you haven't tried a pair of Hoka One One shoes, if their unique design has put you off, well, give it a go. And maybe, like I found, you'll be surprised that you absolutely love them. Use the promo code RUNNINGFORREAL, that's the number 4, on hokaoneone.com for free expedited shipping and become part of the family. It's time to fly. Okay, Jason, 4 more questions for you, starting with a unique nutrition tip or something that you do or use within your training.
Sure. So I eat something that I've found that most people just completely despise. I love sardines. I eat a can of sardines probably 3 times a week.
Wow.
I love the ones that are just drenched in olive oil, and you know they're
just
so good
like
for you.
Put them into your mouth, just like out of a can. With your fingers?
Sure. Yeah. You just use a fork and go ahead and eat those little sardines.
Okay.
But they're great for you. I mean, they have low mercury because they're a small fish. Mm-hmm. The ones that I get are sustainably caught. There's no BPA in the lining.
Where do you get them from? Just for anyone who's interested in trying or having. But what's the brand that you use?
Yeah. So I really love Wild Planet sardines.
Yes. Yeah. I like Wild Planet.
Wild Planet sardines are just amazing. I mean, they're just a huge source of protein. There's no carbohydrate in them. So it's not exactly something that you use for fueling, but it's a really great recovery food. And they're just incredibly healthy. I mean, they give you a lot of those healthy fats that you're looking for. So if you can stand the fish taste, they're, I think, one of the perfect foods.
I was going to say, you might get some nasty fish burps with them.
Yeah, you might have some of those.
Maybe you get used to them. Okay.
It's not before a date kind of a food.
Yeah, I was going to say, or maybe before your marathon or something, you wouldn't want to do that and taste that like halfway around and be like, ooh.
Oh, no way. Not my idea of a good burp during a race.
We went off topic there. All right. What about a running for real moment for you? A moment that only runners will understand.
So I haven't talked about this a lot ever, but I've actually come very close to quitting running many times during my running career. I took probably 6 weeks off of running in the fall of 2007. I moved into a house with like 5 of my friends. It was like a frat house. Mm-hmm. Hard to do a lot of serious training when you're living in that environment. And so I took about 6 weeks off. I went to the gym a lot. I tried to gain all this weight because I wanted to, you know, get big as a typical 24-year-old guy really wanted to do. But you know, I got back into running after that very quickly. And then, you know, I mentioned my 6-month ITBS injury back in about 2009. I almost quit then too, because I just thought, you know, after 6 months, you know, you're really starting to lose a lot of fitness at that point. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to spend another 6+ months getting back into shape, because that's how much time it would probably take to get back to your previous top form. And for me, it was just such a daunting task. But every time that I've thought about quitting, I've thought about just all the hard work that I was doing, why I was doing all that, you know, because I was never a pro runner. I was, you know, I've run a 239 marathon. That is not getting me any shoe sponsorships whatsoever. I'm not even in the sub-elite field, you know, at major marathons. And, you know, I wasn't sure if I wanted to keep training, you know, 2 hours a day, because that's almost what I was doing. And you combine all the other things that you're doing besides running into your training program, but I did stick with it. And one of the things that I look back on in my running career that I'm incredibly grateful for is that I did stay with running after I graduated college, despite the injuries and all the second guessing and doubts that I had. And I think that's true among every runner. You know, we all are out there when it's really hot or cold doing a workout or long run and start wondering why the hell we're out there. What are we doing? The couch is much more of an attractive place to be. We don't have to be out here, but you know, in hindsight, it's some of the most memorable and rewarding experiences of my life. So if anyone's out there thinking about quitting, just stick with it. And I know you'll look back on it very fondly.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. And definitely something I think everyone has experienced at some point. So thank you so much. What about a high moment for you?
Well, I've had a lot of high moments. I mean, I can look at all the different races that I've run. I mean, my marathon PR is one of my favorite running highs that I've ever had. I raced the steeplechase in college, and that was just an incredible, fun event to race. And, and that's one of my favorite running memories. But when I really think back on my running career, it all comes down to the people that I've met along the way. I mean, here I am Skyping with you right now, Tina. This is just great. And, you know, I married a runner that I met in college. We were both on the cross country and track teams. At my wedding, my best man was my cross country co-captain from high school. And two of my other groomsmen were my teammates from college. So for me, like, the most memorable running high that I've had is meeting the most important people in my life and the new people that I get to meet today from the sport. So for me, it's just, I love it. I love runners. We're all kind of geeky and nerdy, and that's the best part, I think.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much. That's such a nice answer. Okay. And finally, what do you tell yourself when you're standing on the start line of a race?
So I'm a big believer in being prepared for races, which I don't think is a novel thing to believe in. But I like to remind myself of that when I'm on the starting line. I think a lot of runners get nervous or anxious right before a big race. And, you know, that's completely normal. That doesn't change no matter if you're the fastest runner in the world or, you know, someone running their first race. But, you know, I like to tell myself, you've done the hard work. You've done workouts as hard or perhaps even more challenging than this race is going to be. So trust that training, believe in that training. And, you know, when the going gets tough, which it inevitably will later in that race, you're going to think back on all those hard workouts. You're going to think back on, you know, all the fitness that you've gained from running hard and all the consistency that you've had in your training program. And for me, that gives me a lot of confidence. I know that if I've prepared well, then I'm prepared to race well. Okay. So that gives me, you know, kind of an extra confidence boost right on the start.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing and for the advice there. That's really helpful. All right. Finally, where can people find out more about you if they are interested in, you mentioned your strength training program, you mentioned strength running, your website. Where can people find you if they are interested in learning more?
Yeah, well, strengthrunning.com is my home base. That's where you'll find our podcast, our blog. Most of our videos are also within different blog posts on strength running. So that's definitely the place for us. And, you know, we also have like content specific areas. So if you're interested in nutrition for runners or injury prevention or strength training, you know, there's some options right on the homepage where you can learn more about that. But and then I'm on social media too. So if you want to say hi, I'm JasonFitz1 on Instagram or Twitter. And you can find Strength Running on Facebook too.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Jason. This has been really interesting to hear your thoughts on these typical runner questions. I know I will be referencing this podcast a lot. So thank you so much for being put on the spot there. You had no preparation for what I was going to ask you and doing a fantastic job of answering the questions.
Well, thanks, Tina. This was a lot of fun. I always love connecting with you and hearing how you're doing. It's just great to actually speak with your community. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so none of us will ever make any of those mistakes ever again, right? No, if only. Unfortunately, we all know that we'll probably fall into at least one of these again at some point, but that's just the life of a runner. So be sure to check back to this episode from time to time because it might remind you and catch you just at the right time so that you don't end up in a bad situation like we talked about today. And please, if you think this could be helpful to your running friends, sharing this episode on your Facebook page, with your Instagram followers, in your running groups, and anyone else who you think would find it helpful doesn't just help them to be better runners and stay healthy and stay happy, but it helps me a lot. So thank you so much in advance for anyone who has done that. You can find links to everything we talked about today in the show notes at tinamuir.com/episode67. And next week, I have sports psychologist to many Olympians, Kim Dawson. I know you love these episodes, so I don't really have to say much, but be sure to subscribe to the Running For Real podcast so it comes right to you next Friday. And there's none of this, oh, I'll remember to download next week and then we forget, because just tends to happen with running, especially if you are out running right now. First thing you should do when you get back, go subscribe. Thank you so much and have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Running For Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.